home or you're in an environment where people don't want to thrive, they don't want to get better, how are you going to be bettering yourself when you're just sitting at home? So for me, it was really important for me to actually get in here and, you know, talk to people and be in a positive environment. That was important for me to just build my career and build my skills.
Hi, I'm Mark Gagne.
And I'm Chris Corcoran, and you're listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Tech Sales for Hustlers is a podcast where we catch up with Memory Blue alums and reminisce about their start in high-tech sales with us.
Let's go get some, Corcoran.
Gagne, you know I'm ready.
Brooklyn Newberry in the house. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Mr. Corcoran?
Brooklyn, great seeing you again. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Okay, let's get into it. So you left in March of 2022,
yeah.
Right? So it hasn't been that long, but you've got a great story. So we want to share it with folks.
Yeah.
People who work here now, who are thinking about coming to work here. But let's get to know you a little bit, because even Chris and I, you know, we didn't have the pleasure of working with you. We got to hang out when we were in the office and hang out at Tops a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us about you, where you're from, growing up, that sort of thing.
Definitely. So I grew up in Littleton, Colorado.
Okay.
I have never really left Colorado.
Where is that relative to Denver?
It's about 30 minutes towards Colorado Springs.
Okay.
So not too far away, but I never left. I grew up there and then went to college at University of Colorado Boulder.
So siblings?
Yeah, I have an older sister and a younger sister.
Okay, so you're the middle child.
I am the middle child, yes.
What were you like growing up? What kind of kid were you like? Just tell us a little bit about Brooklyn, the child.
Yeah, I was always very cautious, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
I was the one that was, you know, always trying to take care of my older sister or my younger mm-hmm. sister. I never really took, you know, leaps of faith. I was very, like, played it safe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually, that's changed a lot for me.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're in sales, that's a more of a less conservative profession.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
I know.
For sure. Okay. What were you like in high school? I know, but for people to know, like, how do you occupy your time? Some people do competitive sports. Some people have jobs. Some people mm-hmm. do, you know, thespians. Like, what was your thing?
Yeah. In high school, I actually did a lot of sports. I did figure skating, mm-hmm. which is, you know, definitely a different one. And then I did cheerleading and dance, which
yep.
I pursued through also college and, you know, now professionally.
Yes.
And then I also did golf and a little bit of track. So
wow.
I was very much the athletic type in high school.
That's amazing. Tell us about this. Which one of those was your favorite? Did you have a favorite? Because, tell us, you still dance now competitively.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us right. about that real quick. Just so this is a little bit fun fact. We don't have many people like you with that sort of claim to fame.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously dance being my favorite.
Yeah.
I now dance professionally for the Denver Nuggets,
mm-hmm.
which has been awesome. So yeah, definitely a lot of time and practice and effort going into that, you know.
Yeah. Was that your favorite when you were in high school?
Yeah, actually me and my dad used to go up to Nuggets games together. And
yeah.
so it was kind of sentimental and important for me to start trying out for the team when I was 18 and
yep.
able to try out. I actually tried out for the team 5 times in a row and didn't make it. Finally, on my fifth season trying out, I finally made that team. So it's been sentimental for my dad and my family to come watch me from the same season tickets they've had ever since I was a little girl.
All right, we're going to take a pit stop on that right now.
That's the definition of wearing them out.
Right.
I love it. So many people would have quit after the first time, let alone the fourth time.
Right. Yeah.
So
I mean,
hats off to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely took a lot of determination. It took a lot of effort and also just a lot of, you know, hearing criticism every year. I mean, it's something different every year. And just taking that and putting it on myself to really work and better myself. And I've really taken that skill, you know, towards the rest of my careers and the rest of my journey as I've been getting older too.
Absolutely. So talk to me about how competitive dancing is. People don't know.
Yeah, no, it's really intense. There's so many people who grew up dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's definitely very competitive sports. You know, it's a lot of perfectionism as well.
Yeah.
People who do dance, you know, criticizing yourself as well to make sure that you're able to, you know, better yourself, but also taking criticism from coaches and staff in order to better yourself. And so, yeah, it can be a lot of time. It's a lot of effort and it's been quite the journey to get where I am today.
Yeah, I want to talk about how some of that translates into sales, because you have to be competitive to be in sales. You have to be.
Absolutely.
Right? So some of those things translate over, and there is rejection involved in things you may or may not take personal, things you may or may not have an opportunity to blame someone else for. Maybe it's not going exactly your way.
Right.
So, but you kind of live that ethos based upon what you just told us. Like, I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
I think you maybe told me that you'd been out the first time, but I know it was four times.
Yeah.
Fifth time was the charm. You're badass. So when you're in high school, you know, playing all these sports, crushing, obviously extremely athletic. Well, what did you think you wanted to do when you kind of grew up, so to speak, when you're going in, you know, in high school? What were you going to do at post-college? What would you thought you were going to go to college for?
Yeah, I wasn't really sure. I took a class actually in high school that I really enjoyed, you know, within biology. And so I decided to take, you know, that route when I went to college, and really enjoyed it in college. But
where'd you go to school?
University of Colorado Boulder.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And why'd you go there?
I wanted to stay close to home.
Okay.
I've always, again, been, you know, very, you know, family oriented. Uh-huh. And also that I think there's that, you know, scarcity of taking risk.
Yeah.
Also maybe going to a new place, making new friends. But, you know, I really enjoyed my time there and, you know, studied biology, which was great for me.
So what'd you think you were going to do with that degree when you were there? Because you're not using that degree now, which is fine, right? But like where'd you think you're going to go with it?
I didn't actually know. And for a while, I think I came to the conclusion that I wasn't going to do anything with it, because there's only a few different places you can go with biology. You know, you could go into nursing, or you could go into doing, you know, some sort of data and statistics, or, you know, go to medical school. And those weren't really places that I saw myself. And so when I was in college, I started exploring different options, you know, towards the end of, okay, what other things could I be good at? What other sort of jobs could I potentially see myself in? And that's when I, you know, started transitioning into the thought of sales.
Yeah. And then what exposed you to that? Like, did you have friends and family in sales? I hear you're a biology major. Most biology majors are thinking about getting into sales. Maybe pharmaceutical sales, I would guess. I'm not sure.
Right.
So where did sales pop up?
I actually got recommended to do sales.
Okay.
From a family member who, you know, knew that I was very outgoing and would like to talk to people, and thought that that might be a good way for me to go. Right. Exactly. Very competitive with dance.
Yeah.
So they, you know, actually recommended it to me. And that's when I started, you know, kind of getting that idea in my mind. But it wasn't until Andrew Plax, he reached out to me.
Oh, thank you. That's my sign, Chris.
Yep. Boom. Andrew Plax,
he reached out to me. On top of it. All right.
Yeah. He reached out to me over LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I seriously started to consider, you know, sales, was, you know, talking to the Memory Blue reps and, you know, actually feeling like I could start fitting in.
When did he reach out to you? Were you still in school, or were you out?
It was towards the end. So it was maybe like a week before I graduated at the end of the summer. And then I, you know, graduated and then ended up, you know, coming here in September. But yeah, he reached out to me and we had a lot of conversations based off of, you know, what my goals were, my different personality types.
Yeah.
And I started, you know, kind of putting the puzzle pieces together in my head, you know, like that this was actually something that would really fit my personality and my dreams and goals and aspirations.
Yeah. And then I remember, well, you know, your pre-show notes, you kind of equated sales to dance and from a performance art.
Yeah.
Go in and you like people, but go elaborate on that further, because I had someone who I interviewed who's a dancer in college now.
Mm-hmm.
She accepted, she put it on LinkedIn. And I remember I talked about you to her, but not about this piece. But I talk about the competitive piece of it, but talk about this piece, because I think for people who like to perform, it's good for them to hear from you about the similarities in sales.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so I always think, and I've always thought, you know, sales is kind of a performance. Mm-hmm. You know, you get your script, you have certain points that you want to make sure you're hitting, certain things that you might have to do in order to enhance the performance. And so I've always thought of, you know, cold calling, you have your performance. Sometimes there's going to be some hiccups within that performance. You know, I'm never going to go out and dance on the court and have a perfect performance. It's just not going to happen. It just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to know when those hiccups happen, you know, how to still manipulate that situation into something that's going to be a positive outcome. something that's still going to be, at the end of the day, a good performance. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of people maybe in dance, or maybe people who are also maybe actors, or, mm-hmm. you know, in the theatrical world, I think that you could definitely all relate, you know, to the same situation, because no one ever has a perfect performance, mm-hmm. but it's all about manipulating it enough to have a good performance, a good outcome.
Mm-hmm. Chris, those are some good takes right there.
Yeah, definitely.
So as Plax was kind of talking you through it, what attracted you to it during the interview process?
Yeah, it was actually really just talking about the different qualities that make up a good salesperson. Mm-hmm. You know, being personable, you know, being sociable. It's all, so I always described it when I was talking to him, you know, during these prep interview calls, as a puzzle. You know, sometimes there's certain things in the world that are going on. You know, maybe right now it's a recession. So there's a lot of people who are, you know, trying to make do with the money that they have. So how are you going to sell a product now based off of the money that they do have to fit their needs based off the real world problems? Mm-hmm. I started having conversations with like that with Plax, where, you know, it started to really click in my mind, like, hey, I could do this. These are some good points I'm making. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was more of a conversation prep for these interviews than it really was, you know, him trying to persuade me to go into sales.
Yeah. And then who else did you interview with from here?
I interviewed with Steve Matalakis.
Okay. Got it. Oh, love. Thank you. Man, you actually could listen to you.
And Julia Fitzgerald.
Yes. Yep. 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 You got it.
So I interviewed with them too. That's also when I think I really decided that I wanted to go into sales. Especially when I was talking with Steve Matalakis, who had, you know, then become my DM and my uh-huh. manager and my, you know, my mentor, someone I really looked up to. You know, he also believed in a lot of the things that I was saying. And when I actually came here and, you know, started doing these calls, and he was a manager that would allow us to put our own creative spin on things. And he would encourage those creative spins in order to sell your product, or, you know, make something into a better performance or a better situation. And I think that having that conversation right off the bat really made me want to do this job as well, because I really wanted to be able to put my creative spin into a job.
Yeah, that's critically important. I think some people kind of question themselves and want to do the outbound piece, mm-hmm. especially the way we train you. We want you to run our own little offense.
Right.
But you're right. You have to put your own, once you kind of figure out the material,
right,
or the moves, right? Because they're moves, not mm-hmm. dance moves, but they're moves. Yeah. And once you put your personal take or spin on it, it can be more effective.
Right.
But you exactly. gotta get comfortable with it.
Yeah, because everyone has their own different creative take. I mean, mm-hmm. there are stories that I heard from, you know, some people pretending to be the CEO of the company to make them seem, you know, super big and high and mighty, like, you know, they're taking their time out of their day to talk to you, you know? So there's stories like that, that are, you know, that's their creative piece. You know, my creative piece was always looking at real world situations, finding a common objection that I was hearing between all of the people that I was calling, and starting off with having that conversation about the objection. Like, hey, I know that it's really difficult to get technology out right now, because I know that there's a chip shortage. We have this stock, we have this, like, what can I do to help? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, that would just right off the bat get me into a conversation of, let's have a meeting, let's talk about it.
Yeah, because you're kind of hitting the objection head on.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah. And I've definitely taken that over into even the position that I have today.
Yeah, we're going to get to. Yeah. So you're thinking about the gig, but you're also dancing for the Nuggets mm-hmm. full time, right? And you got to take on this job. You kind of know what you're getting yourself into?
Kind of. It's always really difficult to, you know exactly what you're getting into, but I knew it was going to be a lot of work. And so when I, you know, originally got into it and, you know, started doing my sales job and doing dance, I just had to take it a day at a time, honestly, because, mm-hmm. you know, I'd have practice after work, and then, you know, sometimes games where I have to be at the court at, you know, 4 p.m. or yeah. 3 p.m. or, you know, and I think the most important thing for that was just always being so open and communicative with my manager and the people around me on my team mm-hmm. to make sure that they knew, you know, that they could still rely on me and depend on me to get my job done and do what I needed to do. I think that became really important in order to balance both.
Yeah. And how did we do that? So you worked your climb. Let's walk through when you started, right? You went to with the boot camp.
Yep.
Remember the academy?
Yeah.
What was that experience like for, you know, people who want to know what that experience is like?
If you're competitive, driven, and curious, it's time to consider a professional sales opportunity that your future self will thank you for. With an unmatched training program and a tradition of elevating our people, Memory Blue has helped hundreds of successful professionals launch lucrative tech sales careers. You will grow highly marketable skills through ongoing mentorship from seasoned sales leaders while showcasing your abilities for tech industry royalty and some of the hottest startups around. And you'll do it all surrounded by driven, like-minded colleagues immersed in our award-winning company culture. As your tenure progresses, you will attract a host of career options. This includes moving up internally or venturing out into the tech industry, where tech companies pay a premium for Memory Blue experience. We have immediate openings in our offices from coast to coast. Visit memoryblue.com/SDR and apply today.
Yeah, boot camp was actually really fun for me. Yeah. I have never been to DC before. And so that was kind of a fun trip. I got to meet a lot of the people who were in my starting class. Mm-hmm. Again, for a group full of people who are super sociable and love people, mm-hmm. you know, that's always going to be, you know, a great experience just to start off with. But then throughout boot camp, you know, you start having these little mini competitions or, Yeah, so it'd be like, you know, who has the best, you know, call, or you would write down like in intros, like who had the best intros. Mm-hmm. You would start reading them to each other, like getting more comfortable with, you know, the sales position and how you're going to start cold calling. We would even do some practice cold calls and just starting to do that kind of competitive aspect and meeting people. Then that's also when, you know, we all started to realize, okay, this is fun. Like, you know, sales is this competition that, you know, it's a friendly competition where we're kind of using each other to build each other up, you know, and be a team while we work together. So, you know, I think that also made me realize how much sales was a good fit for me. And I think a lot of the other people in my training camp also felt the same way.
You have some pretty good takes on these things.
Yeah.
Like, where did that come from? Just thinking this through?
Yeah.
Having conversations with people about it?
Yeah, I think every day with dance, I'm out in the community.
Yeah.
I'm having conversations with, you know, people who are really high up in the NBA.
Yeah.
I'm having conversations with sometimes celebrities. I'm mm-hmm. having conversations with, you know, people who are like really high up in law enforcement agencies.
Yeah.
You know,
and job now.
Yeah, which is my job now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it just practice performance, you know, talking is a performance for me. And I think that's, you know, same with actors, same with dancers,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, talking becomes your performance.
Yep.
It's kind of fun.
So when you came back from boot camp and you got assigned to your client, just walk us through what that transition was like. So your first sales job,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And you've got this client and you're working. We worked it out where your manager was on the East Coast and you were here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and that worked out great. Obviously.
Right.
Talk us about the transition from like doing the job.
Yeah, I think, well, personally, I thought that the training and boot camp over in DC really helped me prepare, you know, for the actual job that it was. You get your client and you just start writing your script. You know, that's the first thing you do. You work on your scripts. I mean, a lot of people, when you first start your SDR job and you're out of boot camp, you work on your scripts. You start practicing for sometimes up to a week to make sure that you're ready for this performance. Just kind of like how you would with my dance practices. You know, I start practicing and then you lead up to that one performance. And so it was a nice transition to, you know, right, let's start writing out my script. Let's start practicing. Let's start mm-hmm. having practice phone calls and with your manager. And then when it came to the performance, I really did feel prepared to start calling on for my client Counter Trade at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And right off the bat, you know, practice makes perfect, right? You know, so as much practice you get, is however much you put in is what you're going to get out. So, you know, took the time in practicing and, you know, started seeing outcomes, you know, right away, which was great.
Chris, we need more dancers to work here. Right? I mean, I've never thought about it before, but just like, you're so correct. I mean, you're completely hitting the nail on the head.
Yeah, thank you.
tell us about your client. your first client?
Yeah, so CounterTrade, we sold a lot of hardware. So like Dell computers, Cisco computers, the Lenovo computers. I sold to a lot of different classrooms, universities. And during the time, we're still on lockdown. This is still COVID. People are working from home. So definitely saw an increase for the need for a lot of computers, because a lot of also companies needed to give out, you know, company laptops, or mm-hmm. things would break and mm-hmm. they wouldn't know how to fix it because they wouldn't have maybe an IT that would be able to be on site to help them and fix it. So what this company would do is, you know, we would give them the computers, but we would also have that amazing customer service for people who are working from home to be able to access us, to be like, hey, you know, I need a new computer because this one shut down on me. And, you know, we would be able to send that out right away, you know, rather than waiting for your company to go through the IT and for them to get back. So this was really important for, you know, the time being. Also, there was the chip shortage. So a lot of people couldn't get a lot of the computers out. And so for selling my the product at the time and calling these companies, I think that, you know, starting off with the problem, hey, like I'm calling from CounterTrade. I know that there is a chip shortage. I know that it's been really difficult to get computers out right now. How are you dealing with that? What computers do you need? You know, what's on back order? Let me see how I can help. And usually right then and there, they'd be like, all right, I need this many Lenovos and I need this many Dells and I need this many servers. And then, you know, I'd be like, all right, let's have this meeting. Let's talk about it. And then right then and there, you know, my AE is writing down all the things I need. And, you know, there we go. Bada bing, bada boom. We got a client.
Tell the listeners and Chris, the one of your experiences here with your client. You worked at Memory Blue. This is just a tremendous story.
Yeah. So
talk about performance.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a great example of the performance aspect. You know, my manager at the time, Steve Monolakis, he came down to the Denver office and was visiting. So my client wanted to come in, CounterTrade, they wanted to have a tour of the office. Originally, we just thought it was going to be, you know, the director of sales, you know, maybe his counterpart. But he decided to bring all of the AEs. So there's like 15 people walking around the Memory Blue office just for me. I was there only SDR.
Only SDR on the campaign.
But they had all these people walking around and touring the office. And at the time, I was down in the third level. The swing space. Mm-hmm. And we had both the offices. And so we had 15 people in the conference room. And Steve goes, you know what we should do? We should have a live blitz. And I'm looking at Steve like, we didn't talk about this.
Thanks, Monolakis.
Yeah, I'm like, thanks for the heads up. We didn't, but, you know, I was like, yeah, totally. We should totally have a live blitz, you know? So we set everything up. We're in a huge conference room. I bring my laptop. I have my headset. And I've just got a crowd of people sitting around me as I'm calling. You know, I'm not getting much luck. No one's really answering the phone.
But yeah, but let's just take that for a second. You're doing something okay. Extremely difficult.
Yeah.
In front of 15 people.
Oh yeah.
And what you're going outbound, which is them listening, and they can hear both sides of the conversation.
Right.
And you're calling through the list.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking to myself, oh, someone better answer, and I better book something, just to make, you know, I've got to do this. So finally, you know, it's been some time. Finally, someone answers.
It probably wasn't that long, but it probably felt a lot longer.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, they finally get someone on the phone and they're in a horrible mood and they're just giving me every single objection. I don't have time. You know, I'm not the person. We have no budget. Like, who are you? What are you talking about? Like, just horrible mood, just giving me like 15 objections. And I went through my script. I went everything, you know, played everything kind of by the book. And, you know, everything that I learned from training camp, I just all of a sudden just hit it. Like it just hit everything on the dot and turned it around to the point where they actually were telling me their pain point and they were actually excited to be on the next meeting. And, you know, after that, I hung up the phone and turned around and all of the AEs and everyone in the room just jaw was dropped, just staring at me. No one said anything for probably what felt like 5 minutes before they were just like, how did you do that? it was seriously so wild. And even Steve was like, yeah, wait, how did you do that? which was funny.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's no. It's easy to talk about.
Brooklyn, do you have that call recorded?
It was recorded, and I'm pretty sure I forget who. I think someone saved it. I had to send it to someone, but it's definitely somewhere. I think either I saved it on my computer or Steve saved it. It's somewhere.
Honestly, you got to get your hands on that.
Yeah. That's your piece de resistance.
I know. Right? It's crazy. It was a crazy call.
When you were here, who else was good that you were learning from, like on the floor?
Yeah, so in Denver, I had a mentor. And in mm-hmm. D.C., I had a mentor. So in Denver, Gia Deschaudens.
Gia. She's great.
Yeah, Gia's awesome. So I was learning from her, which, you know, obviously, it's funny because we were in the swing space at the time. Mm-hmm. And Gia and I were, you know, we would go head to head.
I would love to have ringside seat.
It was this really fun, you know, kind of like head to head against mentor mentee that we had going on of who could book the most in a day. And they had, it was Caroline, Team Caroline. She had a whiteboard and she would write everyone's names. And even though I wasn't on Caroline's team, I wrote my name at the bottom.
You just want to be part of that team.
Right. And I would start like racking up the numbers and Gia would get like, you know, when I stood up to go change my number to like however many booked or however many occurred, you would see Gia's face like, oh, I have to get another one. And so it was actually it was really fun for me to have that, you know, kind of competitiveness with my mentor, because it just made that working environment so much more fun to have the person who's also training you have this like little competition going with you. And then we would, you know, go out and get lunch for the winner or, you know, do something fun. So we had a blast doing that.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And you, anyone else that game?
Yes. Well, not in that game, but then I had another mentor that was also in DC, Aaron.
Okay. Aaron.
Oh gosh, I'm forgetting.
Aaron Miller.
Thank you.
Oh, Aaron Miller. Yes. Yeah, no, she's strong. She works for Steve now.
Yeah, she does. She works for Steve.
Oh, better.
There you go.
Slightly better.
Miller time.
Miller.
Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah. So, you know, we didn't have like that competition, but she was definitely the mentor that was so wise. Just like I would have like a little problem and she's like, why don't you try it like this? You know, or why don't you do this? And it was just crazy because it worked so well. Yeah. And so me and her, you know, had a really good friendship and we became friends over the years. I still talk to her to this day. She wants to come out and visit in Colorado. But yeah, she was awesome. And another great mentor that I had, hung out with her on Tops too. We had a great time.
Yep.
But yeah, some really great people I've worked with here.
Yeah. You were flashing your athletic ability there.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I can't do flips either.
Yeah.
I can't dance. I can't do flips. I'm not that good on the phone anymore.
Yeah.
As you're working here, right? So you're learning the game. I mean, you're obviously applying your past success in life to this position, qualify for Tops, which is an incentive trip for top performers. Mm-hmm. Steve obviously had a really strong team.
Right.
But not only that, like, I think what says a lot about you is sometimes people who, if their team is back east and they're here, like, you are ingratiating yourself with the people around in this office too. For some people, like, I don't work with anybody here. Maybe I can work from my house. Why was that important to you, the office culture in that part of your career?
Yeah, I think that just, again, comes from being sociable. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to feel that competitiveness. And I would feel that competitiveness, obviously, with being on, you know, Team Monolakis, where, you know, we were usually, you know, at the top of the scoreboard for lots of things, and we were trying to make sure that we stayed there.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to feel the competitive nature in Denver, too. So it was really important for me to at least, you know, play some games, like, with my mentor or, you know, kind of, you know, pick on, you know, Caroline's team a little bit, like, you know, by being competitive, like, hey, Luke, I see that you haven't gotten a book today, you know?
Yeah.
You know, just kind of, you know, picking on them, you know, obviously as friends, but that was just important for me. It was important for me to feel competitive and feel sociable and also make those friends, you know? It's hard to be sometimes in an office if you are working from home, because you don't have people to go to lunch with or, you know, hang out with. So for me also, being in the office space was really important for me to have some friends and be able to get some lunch and create that competitive and, you know, happy culture within the office too.
Would you recommend that culture to someone who's looking to get started as an SDR?
Absolutely. Yeah. And even if you're thinking about, you know, being remote or, you know, being in an office culture that has a good culture, it is really important. Even when I had the option to, you know, be remote every other week when, you know, DC was going back and forth, I would prefer to be in the office here in Denver most of the time because it was just so important for me to be able to build off each other. And, you know, people around you can really, you know, make or break something, you know, because, you know, they can be positive and be building you up, which also makes you better in your career, which makes you want to be better in your career. If you're at home or you're in an environment where people don't want to thrive, they don't want to get better, how are you going to be better in yourself when you're just sitting at home? So for me, it was really important for me to actually get in here and, you know, talk to people and be in a positive environment. That was important for me to just build my career and build my skills even.
Corcoran, and she's got some, meanwhile, she's working with the Nuggets, doing her dance thing. If anybody would have an excuse to try and work from home, it would be you.
Right. And I know a lot of teammates that do try to work from home just because of that. But then they get to practice and they're like, well, I feel like I didn't do anything today because I just sat at home and then I came to practice.
Yeah.
Even though they were doing their job, it almost feels like they become more lazy or you know, they have not as much motivation.
Yeah.
And so I think it just helps to be in the office for just your mental state too.
Yeah.
100%.
100%. Right.
Hey, Brooklyn, what was the biggest misconception you had about being an SDR?
I was worried that, you know, it was just going to be like cold call, like I'd be miserable, like just making 100 phone calls a day, like, you know, getting people on the phone who were maybe rude to me. I thought that was going to be the life that I was getting into. And absolutely, you're going to be making calls, but it wasn't that life. For me, I was more focused on the competitive nature and the, you know, the family and team aspect of the company than I ever was for those 5-second phone calls that I would have. You know, you'd think that your whole day was going to be like calling people, but really, like you would call in the morning and you would call at night, but everything else has to do with your team and the competitive nature and building each other up and, you know, these little in-betweens of, you know, trying to find, be creative and trying to find different ways that would work as sales tactics. Like maybe there's something on LinkedIn that you're doing, or maybe you're researching a problem that's happening within the worlds that could really benefit, you know, a tactic that could really benefit the people that you're going to call. And so it was so much more than that. And, you know, I think that for anyone who is, you know, maybe scared to be in that SDR position, you know, That calling aspect is a small portion. It is an important portion, but it's not the whole thing. There's such more of a creative platform, you know, that you'll need, a more of a performance like platform that you'll need in order to be successful.
That's a great question, Chris, and that's a great answer, Brooklyn.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Why don't more people have that perspective, right? Because some people will get all tied up in those things. That you're right, they're a portion of it, but why doesn't everyone kind of see it more that way? Not to see it exactly your way, but that's like the challenge we have.
Yeah, you know,
not with everyone, but
we can think about this in another way. You know, why do we hear more negative news than positive news, right? People like to complain, you know, or, you know, maybe they had a bad experience in something. People are going to always say something, you know, that's negative, and that might stick out to you more than someone who's having a positive experience. You know, the news never talks about, you know, the great things that are happening in someone's life. You know, I think it's just important to talk to both sides, maybe talk to someone who had like not a great experience, but also take into consideration talking to someone who had a great experience and seeing actually where what your opinion is and where your opinion lies, you know, rather than just looking at one side or the other. You know, you actually have to make that, you know, that prediction by yourself.
Well,
yeah, I don't remember seeing the news story about the young woman from Littleton, a hometown hero, tried out for the Nuggets 4 years in a row. On the fifth year, she finally made the team. I don't remember seeing that on the news. They'd rather talk about something bad, right? Something negative.
Oh, absolutely.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because the way I haven't heard someone, I don't think we've had anyone chop up the job that way, Chris. We've had really good takes on it, like yours. But that is one that it requires some perspective,
right?
I think.
Yeah.
And it's hard for people to get past the rejection.
Right.
I think.
Right.
Right.
Definitely.
Like, there's a lot of rejection in the gig. Mm-hmm. And you can normalize it certain ways and rationalize it, which is great. And everyone digests that. But then sometimes people can't get past it and they end up blaming everything else.
Right.
Right. And everyone but themselves. Mm-hmm. When they control the perspective.
Right.
Of where they're coming from.
Right. Because I think if you actually talk to someone, you know, maybe someone who didn't get the job who's like, oh, I would never do that because it's, you know, and then they say all the negative things rather than someone who has been in the job who's, you know, been doing really well and thriving. I mean, it's a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
You know?
So. Yeah. Fascinating. So you're doing the job. Mm-hmm. Where did you think you wanted to go? What you wanted to do?
Well, so.
Because you're seeing people leave. You're seeing people stay. Gia,
right.
Delivery manager here. You got a couple of people here on the sales team who are here when you were here.
Mm-hmm.
So you got people who get converted by their clients, people going on rising stars. What did you think? Okay. What was opening up in your mind?
Well, originally, you know, I was like, I'm never leaving. Like,
oh, come on. Gosh, darn it. Seriously?
Oh, yeah. No, I was talking to Libby, you know, and I was like, I'm gonna do like recruiting.
Oh, come on.
Or like DM or something.
Yep, yep.
But it wasn't until I got the client that I have, you know, or, you know, the place I work now
as
a client. And that's when, you know, my idea started to kind of shift because they're such a cool company. And
which is great, by the way.
Yeah.
That's the model.
They're such a cool company and they really make such a difference in the world that, you know.
Tell us about it.
Yeah. So the company I work for, so they're a criminal investigation technology. And what we do is we help solve a lot of crimes. And in order to sell our product, we help solve these crimes and, you know, maybe call up these detectives or these criminal analysts and, you know, let them know, hey, like, I might have a suspect for you. I have this lead for you. Let's have a meeting. Let's check it out. So it's great because we work with a lot of law enforcement agencies to help solve these crimes. But we also do a lot of work within security for like corporate companies as well, or, you know, law enforcement agencies to make, you know, to help them know that this individual is actually not the person they're looking for, to maybe clear someone's name. So there's a lot we can do with our technology, which is really cool.
And what opened up your mind to go work there?
Yeah, so they were my second client here, Memory Blue, and you know, I was having conversations with a lot of the people on the team now are law enforcement or ex-law enforcement, or a lot of them ex-federal, you know, agencies that they've worked for, and they were just talking about some of the differences that they've made, you know, some of the people that they've gotten off the streets, you know, fighting crime, you know, solving serial killer crimes, you know, and that was just incredible to me that you could be in a sales position. You could have that, you know, the creative puzzle aspect where, okay, we're solving these crimes, we're doing these puzzles, but we're also selling a product. So it was just a really interesting and cool world that, you know, I just wanted to be a part of. I thought it was amazing.
And then how did it go down? Like, you were doing your thing and then they bring it up to you and you thought about it and they brought it up before.
Yeah.
Walk us through that, because people always say, well, how do you get hired by a client?
Yeah.
It just happens sometimes.
So, you know, I was just booking a lot of meetings for them and booking a lot of meetings that stuck, you know, with people who would continue to have conversations or, you know, decide to buy, you know, helping them make a lot of revenue. And they were just, you know, amazed by that, you know, especially compared to, you know, some of the other, you know, salespeople on their team that might have different techniques, but, you know, I have a completely different perspective and I'm helping and making all this revenue. And that's when they were like, okay, like we need to have you full time. Like, we can't risk losing you, you know, and then they go ahead and they offer you, you know, a position for you to start there.
And what are you doing for them? Like, what's your role?
Yeah.
And what's your day to day?
Yeah, so I'm an inside sales rep.
Okay.
And so I'm actually doing right now the entire sales cycle from prospecting from the beginning. You know, I could be doing some cold calls. Majority of the time, you know, we either get inbound leads or we actually find prospects out at like conferences or conventions. So, you know, I'll prospect.
So you'll go to convention. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. We just got back from Tampa. I was, you know, prospecting in Disney World. Mm-hmm. That was super fun.
Right.
you know, obviously you're bouncing on a Star Wars ride. You're, you know,
right.
Hey, so what are you doing with your criminal analyst tool?
Yeah, there you go.
So it's kind of fun. So we, you know, we prospect, and then I start writing up contracts or quotes for them. Mm-hmm. You know, I help them even through maybe getting grants or trying to find the funding.
Okay.
And then from there, you know, writing up their official contracts. And then I even do training for them. So we do training in person, and we also do it online. So I could be flying to a police department, you know, just to get everyone onboarded, you know, or I could do that online. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of different bits and pieces that come to my role.
What like muscles have you had to develop as you transition to a closing role that you didn't have coming out of Memory Blue as an SDR?
Yeah, it's very different. And it's actually been taking a lot of time to, you know, get used to, and even still get used to, because it's a lot of follow-up. You know, it starts, you know, with Memory Blue, it's just getting them hooked, getting them interested. And then you have to make sure that you're following up. You send them a quote. All right, hey, like, how's it going coming to, you know, finding a grant? You know, how's the approval process coming? I mean, there's so much more following up, because you have to make sure that they're not forgetting about you. Or if a grant does come through, that you have to make sure that they are going to spend that money on your product, and, you know, they're not just going to spend it on something else. So, you know, it's a lot more following up. It's a lot more checking in. It's also a lot more relationship building. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk to these people, you know, a lot more than you would just in an SDR role. And so they got to become your buddies. You know, you got to be able to call them up. Hey, like, how's your kids? You know, you're just having fun conversations with them, you know, because you want them to be your friends. You want them to be able to trust you. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of relationship building too.
What do you like the most about closing?
Well, I would be lying if I didn't say it was commission.
That's important. Yeah.
But also, I think majority also is creating those relationships.
Yeah.
Those relationships are so important. And that's why I started doing this in the first place, doing, you know, sales, is having those relationships, being able to talk to people, maybe even being able to travel and see these people in person, building those relationships, not just over the phone, but, you know, face-to-face, getting dinner, or, you know, going to these conferences and talking about the problems that are in the world and how we can fix them. Mm-hmm. I think those are, you know, some really important aspects.
Excellent. Excellent. Chris, you got anything? You good?
Brooklyn, so looking back before you started your career as a sales development rep, what advice would you give yourself now that you know where all the pitfalls are and the booby traps are? What advice would you give yourself?
I would tell myself to not be afraid. Kind of like I was talking about when I was growing up, I've always been very afraid of taking chances. And so leaving, you know, a biology degree to come and try out this, you know, sales, you know, gig, there was a lot of, you know, scarcity. Like I was really scared to come into this position and try something new. And I did have to spend some time, like, really making sure, like, this was the path that I wanted to do in my brain. I was kind of having a battle with myself. I think I would just tell myself to not be afraid. Stop having that battle with yourself. Sometimes your gut knows better than your brain. You know, you're stressing yourself out. Just do it. Go follow your gut. You're going to be great at it. You know, don't listen to these negative comments that are coming up. You need to experience it for yourself. You know, follow your gut. That's what I would say.
What about, and you can maybe relate this to women in sales. Mm-hmm. So we have clients who ask us a lot, hey, you know, do you guys have more women? Why don't more women work for you guys? Or can we have, and then, you know, people ask me that. And then, you know, we go to these recruiting events. It seems to be a challenge for us to get more women in the tech sales world. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of a good example that you were a biology major. It's not an easy major.
Right.
At a good school, and we thank you, Andrew Plax, right? All of us owe him a toast. But he was able to kind of get you in the mix. That doesn't always work either. Is it? Why do you think that is? And I don't know. What do you think we can do?
Yeah, I think it's difficult because, same as me, I think there's just a lot of people who are scared. A lot of women who are scared to get into this industry, you know, because usually it's always been male dominant.
Yeah.
So you know, sometimes you feel like, all right, well, maybe I'm not going to be good at that. Or, you know, maybe I'm not going to have a lot of respect there. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I don't want people to feel like, you know, when I talk to them over the phone, like, I don't know what I'm talking about. Or, mm-hmm. you know, I'm, you know, stupid. I'm just a little blonde girl that doesn't know what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. that can be, you know, come from a lot of fear from a lot of other women too. Mm-hmm. And I think just, you know, taking that, again, what the advice that I gave myself, you know, you have to take that advice. You have to know everything's going to be okay. You need to trust your gut. Stop mm-hmm. listening to what other people are saying. You know, stop thinking about the worst possible outcome. Mm-hmm. It's not that way in the real world. you know, you're stressing yourself out. Just go with your gut. You have to go with your gut. And, you know, we need to convince more women out there that go with your gut. You don't need to, you know, go and be in a woman dominant job. You know, sometimes you need to take the leap of faith to actually find what you're good at and what job you're happy in. You know, don't follow the social norm. Don't follow the social standard. You know, go with your gut.
That's great. That's great advice. And, you know, we can kind of end on this. Where do you see yourself going? Like, so now you're closing. You want to keep mm-hmm. doing that for a little while? Have you thought about what you might want to do down the road?
Yeah, I definitely see myself in this position for a while. I do like closing. I love sales. I'm not really sure if I see myself, you know, going out of sales. I think I've really found where mm-hmm. I belong.
Sounds like it.
As far as that goes, I really enjoyed my time. And, you know, if anything, I would at least like to, you know, maybe at one day in my company, like, you know, be a mentor to somebody, you know, also, you know, recreate that, you know, competitive feeling, you know, hopefully we'll get more people on my team so I can be mm-hmm. competitive with them.
Yeah.
But also, you know, just maybe being able to be a manager one day to, you know, talk about my experience and help other people who are starting off in the experience through their struggles and through, you know, maybe their problems, maybe if they're scared or mm-hmm. maybe if they, you know, need advice, you know, I think that that's where I would see myself.
Well, that's great. I don't have any doubt that you're probably going to get there if that's what you want to do.
Sky's the limit.
Yes, absolutely.
Brooklyn, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
It's great to see you.
Yeah, you're
good doing so well.
Yeah,
wow.
Thank you.
You know what? I love hearing these stories. I don't even know about it. What's going on with people? I mean, I see you on LinkedIn, but
yeah,
that was very insightful. And Chris and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Chris, too.
Yep. Thanks, Brooklyn.
Hey, thanks so much.
Memory Blue alumni, are you looking for your next top performing SDR with the competitive drive, hustle mentality, and passion for sales that you can bank on? The Rising Stars program connects accomplished Memory Blue SDRs with alumni looking to expand their teams. Rising Stars have completed their SDR journey with us and are chomping at the bit to land a new and exciting high-tech sales opportunity. They've been professionally trained, coached, and mentored, thriving in the very environment where you launched your career. Alumni like you hire Memory Blue Rising Stars because they can rest easy knowing they're hiring the best in the business. Learn how you can access this unique pool of sales talent by heading to memoryblue.com/alumni.
Thanks for listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star review after the beep.